The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.
Hello, good morning. Hello, and welcome to the Ocean Mist Power Hour. I love that you are here. I love that you're thinking about learning and growth and that you're looking for something new and different in your life to help you progress, to move forward. Because you know what? What is life if we're not moving forward, if we're not progressing, if we're not taking our past experiences and reshaping the future, shaping it as we want to see it? You know, there's a concept out there called revisiting the future or remembering the future. What? Bum, bum, bum. What? What does remembering the future look like? Well, if you want to look out into your future and see what it looks like, try imagining it as if you're thinking of it from the past. So set yourself out there 5 years in the future and now remember what you did to get there. So remembering the future is a really cool strategy to get you on track. Bom, bom! All right, welcome to the Ocean Mist Power Hour. We are here on KCIW 100.7 FM on your radio dial. We're broadcasting out of Brookings Harbor, Oregon, as I like to say it. It's the gateway of the Great Pacific Northwest. This is about as far west, but not completely as far west as you can get in the continental U.S. Truly, this is the home of daffodils in December, flowers all year round, and the nicest people you'll ever meet. I cannot believe the people that live in this town. This is a great place to be. This is where the mountains and the old-growth redwoods meet the sea, and Harbor Brookings is home to me. Thank you to the KCIW sound engineering and production crew. We appreciate them. I appreciate them. They help make this little station, the little station that could, the little station that did, be what it is to you. A resource for music, for talk, for growth, for learning, for everything it is that you want in your life that you can listen to on the radio or on the podcast, right? So you know what? We talk fast here. You got to listen fast. I'm your host, Misty Young. I'm pumping some wattage into your cottage. Today, of course, we're going to talk about health. Now, you know I'm not a doctor. You know I'm a nutrition geek. You know I'm not a scientist, but you do know I hold a nutritional therapist certificate from the Health Sciences Academy and a plant-based nutrition certificate from E. Cornell's T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies. Why do I tell you all that? Because I'm pretty passionate about what to put in my body. And I want you to be passionate about what you put in your body. Why? Because it matters. The fuel you eat fuels the outcome of your future. So when you start thinking about your future, when you start that process of remembering the future, in other words, designing the future by looking back from it at your past, what you're going to find out is that your actions on a day-to-day basis matter. It matters if you exercise. It matters what you put into your body. It matters if you smoke, if you drink alcohol, if you eat too much fat, if you eat animal products. All those things matter. Yes, I'm hypered up. Yes, I'm passionate. Yes, I want to teach you something. Yes, I want you to be thriving. Not just surviving, but thriving. Why would you limp if you could leap? Why would you crawl if you could run? Why would you use a scooter if you could walk? Why would you eat junk if you could put health and vibrance and glory and enzymes and protein from plants into your body? Why would you put junk into your body? You would not eat cardboard. No. You would not drink kerosene. No, 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 no. But the foods they're selling to you at the places that you might go on a fairly regular basis are just that. Now, check it out. There's this concept. I love this concept. There's this concept that eliminating food deserts would help Americans eat healthier. So check it out. A food desert essentially is a place where there's a lack of grocery stores or fresh farmers markets or places where people can get fresh fruits and vegetables. They're kind of known as places in inner cities, right? Where the people that, you know, get the vast majority of their calories from places like fast food outlets. I'm going to try to do better at not naming the fast food outlets on my show because, you know, I don't want to tear them down. You know who they are. I don't have to tell you who they are. In fact, in our household, we have interesting names for all of them. We don't call them by their actual names. We call them by modified monikers, which we think is an awful lot of fun. I hope you can do the same thing. So a food desert is a place where people get the vast majority of their calories from fast food outlets and stores like 7-Eleven and liquor stores and gas stations and, those little dollar type stores. I'm trying really hard not to mention the names of the stores, but you know what I'm talking about. Places where you got to get canned or frozen or whatever. And even in those cases, if you can get canned or frozen veggies, that's better than getting the cardboard that's sold to you in cardboard that's mixed up with animal products and fillers, right? So there's an idea that food deserts cause people to become obese. Now, I'm going to read an article that just came out on December 1st, 2019 in theconversation.com. Now, we have permission to share widely information from theconversation.com, and then we're going to jump right into something absolutely freaking fascinating. I can't wait to share it with you. It's from Dr. Greger. It's hot off the presses. Meanwhile, from theconversation.com, look up if you want to find this article yourself. Remember, I always tell you, you can find the information yourself. You are not at the mercy of information being dumped into your head. You have more information than has ever existed in human history, and you have it at your fingertips. Literally, you have it on your phone, your tablet, your laptop, your desktop. You don't have those things? Go to the library where all those things are immediately available. You have, dun, 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 the internet. Hello, that is the single largest growth tool ever in human history. Now, you're going to go to theconversation.com. You're going to search for an article called Eliminating Food Deserts Won't Help Poorer Americans Eat Healthier. And I like this article because, frankly, I tell you that Brookings Harbor is the gateway of the Great Pacific Northwest. I tell you that it is the home of the nicest people you'll ever meet. I'm also going to tell you it's a socioeconomically depressed area. There's a greater proportion of less wealthy people here. And frankly, when you look around, there's a greater proportion of out of shape, overweight, obese, sick people here. I love the people here. I want to serve the people here. I love my neighbors. I love my colleagues. I love my friends. I love my community. And it hurts my feelings when I see really giant people eating foods that are going to do nothing but make them more giant. It's not that fat is gross. It's unhealthy. It's not healthy. It makes you limp instead of leap. It makes you crawl instead of run. It makes your body sluggish and slow. And it causes all kinds of other diseases, from metabolic syndrome to diabetes to obesity to morbid obesity. And it can literally kill you. Check it out. From theconversation.com, eliminating food deserts won't help poorer Americans eat healthier. Bam! In the U.S., rich people tend to eat a lot healthier than poor people. Because poor diets cause obesity, type 2 diabetes, and other diseases, this nutritional inequality contributes to unequal health outcomes. The richest Americans can expect to live 10 to 15 years longer than the poorest. Many think that a key cause of nutritional inequality is food deserts or neighborhoods without supermarkets, mostly in low-income areas. The narrative is that folks who live in food deserts are forced to shop at local convenience stores where it's hard to find healthy groceries. If we could just get a supermarket to open in those neighborhoods, the thinking goes, then people would be able to eat healthy. However, the data tell a strikingly different story. This is the part that's absolutely freaky. Ready? Negligible change. Oh, I should tell you who the authors are here because this is always helpful. The authors of this article are Hunt Alcott. He's an associate professor of economics at New York University. Jean-Pierre Dubé, he is the Sigmund E. Edelstone Professor of Marketing at the University of Chicago, and Molly Schnell, who is an Assistant Professor of Economics at Northwestern University. Bam! So these aren't slackers that are writing this. These are people who have actual degrees in this kind of stuff, right? Professor of Economics, Professor of Marketing, and another Professor of Economics at major institutions that we all respect. New York University, University of Chicago, Northwestern University. Wow! Oh my gosh. Let's come back to this idea here. Many think that a key cause of nutritional inequality is food deserts or neighborhoods without supermarkets, mostly in low-income areas. The narrative is that folks who live in food deserts are forced to shop at local convenience stores where it's just plain hard to find healthy groceries. If we could just get a supermarket to open in those neighborhoods, the thinking goes, then people would be able to eat healthy. But again, the data tell a strikingly different story. Yeah, I just read that to you twice. Why? Because it's really important to this conversation. Negligible change. We recently studied the impact of opening supermarkets in food deserts in research conducted with fellow economists Rebecca Diamond, Jesse Hanbury, and Ilya Rakovsky. From 2004 to 2016, over 1,000 supermarkets opened in neighborhoods around the country that previously had been food deserts. We analyzed the grocery purchases of a sample of 10,000 households living in those neighborhoods. Did they start to buy healthier food after the supermarket opened nearby? Although many people began shopping at the new local supermarket after it opened, they generally did not buy healthier food. We can statistically conclude that the effect on healthy eating from opening new supermarkets was negligible at best. We calculated that local access to supermarkets explains no more than about 1.5% of the difference in healthy eating between low and high income households. How could this be? Here's the next section, why food deserts aren't the problem. The food desert narrative, that's the big conversation everybody's having. Well, if we just didn't have these food deserts and if people had access to healthy foods, they would eat it. Not so much, because the food desert narrative suggests the lack of supply of healthy foods is what causes reduced demand for them. But in the modern economy, stores have become amazingly good at selling us exactly the kinds of things we want to buy. So our research suggests the opposite narrative. Lower demand for healthy food is what causes the lack of supply. Furthermore, our local neighborhood conditions don't matter much since we regularly venture outside our neighborhoods. We calculate that the average American travels 5.2 miles to shop. Low-income households aren't that different. They travel 4.8 miles. Given that we're willing to travel that far, we tend to shop in supermarkets even if there isn't one down the street. We found that people who live in zip codes without a supermarket still buy 85% of their groceries from supermarkets. Wow, what? Are you serious? So now here we have had this narrative for a long time. And it always cracks me up. You know, people want to take the capitalists in the supermarkets and say, well, they ran away from the poor neighborhoods. They're not serving the people there. If they come back, everybody will do, you know, they'll eat healthier. Yes, I just put on my dad voice. Yep, that was my dad's voice. Dad, I hope you're not listening because I'm ratting myself out here. I have my dad voice and I use it a lot. But the fact of the matter is people aren't choosing well. They're not choosing well. And that's the whole point of this discussion. It's up to you. How many times have you heard me say it? I'm going to say it again. I'll say it on every nutritional broadcast. Every bite of food you eat or drink of beverage you consume is either fighting disease or feeding disease. Fighting or feeding. What do you want to do? I want to support health. I want to support energy. I want to support vibrant living. And I want to support that for you, but it's up to you to do it. I had someone tell me the other day, they had never had a vegan meal. I had a vegan Thanksgiving. They had never had a vegan meal. I'm like, what? For real? Are you serious? You've never had an apple? Come on now. And you've heard that joke too. But it's not really a joke. You get to pick it. So here's what they suggest. Tax sugar. Subsidize produce. In other words, people don't suddenly go from shopping at an unhealthy convenience store to shopping at the new healthy supermarket. In reality, people go from shopping at a faraway supermarket to shopping at a new supermarket that offers the same types of groceries. To be clear, new grocery stores do provide many benefits. In many neighborhoods, new retail can bring new jobs, a place to see neighbors, and a sense of revitalization. People who live nearby get more options and don't have to travel as far to shop. But the data show that healthier eating is not one of those benefits. Instead, we, the authors of this publication, are going to remind you, we're looking at theconversation.com. We're reading an article called Eliminating Food Deserts Won't Help Poorer Americans Eat Healthier. The authors are Hunt Alcott, Associate Professor of Economics at New York University, Jean-Pierre Dubé, Sigmund E. Edelstone, Professor of Marketing, University of Chicago, and Molly Schnell, Assistant Professor of Economics, Northwestern University. Bam, right? So what are they saying? The data that healthier eating is not one of those benefits when they have brand new grocery stores in town. They would recommend instead that we tweak prices as a better approach to encouraging healthier habits. Taxes on sugary drinks can discourage their consumption, while food stamp programs could be modified to make fruits and vegetables cheaper. And given that we develop long-term eating habits as children, parents and schools can encourage kids to eat healthier. You've heard this monkey see, monkey do thing, right? Have you ever heard of the 100th monkey principle? This is such a cool idea. It's such a neat idea. They had 100 monkeys, or they had this huge colony of monkeys on an island, and they taught one monkey how to wash a piece of fruit. So like the fruit had dirt and crust and mud and stuff all over it. They taught the monkey how to wash fruit. And then they taught another monkey how to wash fruit. And they taught another monkey how to wash the fruit. And they taught another monkey. And by the time the 100th monkey got taught to wash the fruit, check this out. This is weird. All the monkeys on the island suddenly knew how to wash the fruit. The 100th monkey principle. Monkey see, monkey do. But it's weird. Monkeys that weren't even in the vicinity of the monkeys that were taught to wash the fruit, monkey number 101 and monkey number 997, same, same. They both learned how to wash the fruit without ever having seen it done. It was as if there was a shift in the consciousness of the monkeys at the moment that it gained some momentum, some mass, some critical mass. They all got it at that time. And that's true with our kids too. They're going to see us eating healthy. They're going to see us choosing apples. They're going to see us choosing bananas, carrots, celery. My grandkids are coming this week, and there's going to be all kinds of fruits and vegetables out for them. And they're going to be told, have as much anytime as you want. As much as you want, anytime you want. The fruits are widely available anytime you want. And you know what's so cute? If you put out baby carrots for my grandkids, they're like, oh, thank you for the baby carrot. Of course, they want ranch dressing to go with them, which I don't serve in my household. But if you put out whole carrots, they're like, what? Long carrots? Where did the big carrots come from? They didn't even get it that big carrots existed. They always saw the little carrots, which there's no such thing as baby carrots that look like that. Baby carrots look just like big carrots, but they're tiny. The ones that you find in the grocery store have been chopped and shaven to look like little tiny baby finger carrots. They don't come that way. And that's why they're always kind of funky and dry and yuck. Ew, gross. But you give a kid a big carrot or a giant piece of celery, they dig it. All right. Given that we develop long-term eating habits as children, parents and schools can encourage kids to eat healthier. Remember, monkey see, monkey do. Let's help our kids by showing them the right behaviors. Let's show them that every single bite of food we consume is either fighting disease or feeding disease. Because the final word in this article in theconversation.com, eliminating food deserts won't help poorer Americans eat healthier. The final word is health inequality is one of our society's most important problems. We hope that this research can direct efforts toward ideas that can materially improve health and away from ideas that do not. Wow, that is big time powerful right there. Big time, because it puts the onus back on you. It puts the onus back on you. It puts it on you to talk about what's at the end of your fork, your fingers, the food that goes in your face. It puts the focus on you. There's a whole lot of F words right there, and they're all legal on radio. Your fingers, your fork, your food to your face. The focus is on you. You get to decide. You get to be the one. No one but you is responsible for what you put into your body. And I don't say that as you're the one that's responsible. I'm saying it to you like, hey, dude, you're responsible. You get to decide. The power is in your hands. Literally, the power of a healthy body is at the end of your fork. It's at the tips of your fingers. It's the focus of the food that you put in your mouth. So from farm to fork to fingers to face, put the focus on healthy, life-giving fruits and vegetables. Walk away from the things that don't support health. Oh, I guarantee you, a Big Mac is good. I know. I used to love Big Macs. I used to love In-N-Out. I loved McDonald's. Oh God, I'm naming names, whatever. I loved all the fast food places because it was so good. And it's designed to be good. It is designed to suck you in and spit you out because it's a profit machine. And I get it. I totally get it. I am not against profit. I'm all down with capitalism. I am. I want you to be down with it too, but be down with it in a way that supports your health at the same time. All right. So, whew, that was awesome. Here we are in KCIW on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. I'm your host, Misty Young. So glad to be here at 100.7 on your radio dial or anywhere in the world on the podcast at any time of day. Welcome. Welcome to sometimes a rant, sometimes a rave, always, always a nutritional conversation to help you change what's going on in your body. You know, I had a doctor once tell me, never, ever miss an opportunity to mess with your body's biochemistry. I swear to God, that was a doctor that told me that. But he said it to me in the context of nutritional support. Never, ever miss an opportunity to mess with your body's biochemistry. I thought that was pretty amazing coming from a doctor. And he was really telling me, he goes like, look, you know, I was having gallbladder problems at the time. And he said, you really have to look at what you eat. He asked me straight up, do you want to keep your gallbladder? I was like, well, yeah, I'm not into surgery. I don't really like doctors. You know, it's crazy because I'm like, I'm all affiliated with all these doctors, right? Like, I love Dr. Greger and I love Dr. McDougall and I love Dr. Esselstyn and I love Dr. Campbell and all these people that are teaching nutrition. But really, the truth is, I don't really like doctors very much. Not that other kind of doctor. The kind of doctor that says, it doesn't matter what you eat. You know, we've got a pill for that. Or we can, you know, we can take that pesky gallbladder out. In fact, the very first gallbladder attack I ever had, oh my God, it was the worst pain I had ever experienced. And I'm going to tell you something. I gave birth to 2 kids at home with a midwife, with no anesthesia, with no nothing, just me and Gary and a midwife and a helper at home did that. Gallbladder attack. Worst pain I've ever had in my life. Horrid. And I ended up in an urgent care. It wasn't the ER. It was an urgent care. And the doc was looking at me and I'm just writhing in pain on the table. And I looked at him and somehow had the power at the moment to say, Doc, if I was your wife, what would you tell me to do? I swear to God, this is what he said. I would tell you to stay out of the hospital at all cost. Mind you, we are in the urgent care across the street from the best hospital in the region at the time. And he says, I would tell you to stay out of the hospital at all cost. I would give you a shot of Toradol to curb the pain. And I would tell you to go home and write it out and then figure it out. Look at what you're putting into your body and figure it out. Blew me away. Guess what? Took the shot of Toradol, went home, wrote it out. The pain, oh, that Toradol was awesome. Slept like a baby, pain gone. And then I really started paying attention to what I put into my body. And then I went to see the doctor who told me never miss an opportunity to mess with your body's biochemistry. And then I went through this whole series of flushes and cleanses and this and that. And here we are 5 years later, my gallbladder is in great shape. No pain, no attacks. My diet has radically transformed. And you might say, oh, well, that was when you weren't vegan. I was. That's the crazy thing. I had been vegan for 3 years by the time I started having gallbladder attacks. And I can tell you what it was. It was huge amounts of fat in my diet. And I love Brazil nuts. So I found Brazil nuts because they're so tasty, but they have 9 grams of fat per nut. 9 grams of fat per nut. So, you know, you sit down and you eat 2 or 3, that's almost 30 grams of fat. Like that's more fat than you should have in a day. But I wasn't eating 2 or 3. I was eating a couple pounds a week. Whoa. Yeah, because I found out that you could buy fully organic raw Brazil nuts from Amazon. I was like, oh my God, these are so good. I would kind of fry them up or roast them and put them inside of, I was making these egg rolls at the time. They were full of cabbage and carrots and garlic and ginger and Brazil nuts. And I just packed the fat into my sweet little gallbladder, that poor little thing in there. But you know what? I fixed it. And the whole reason I shared that story with you is because I want to emphasize this point. You are in charge of what goes into your body. I was in charge of what went into my body. But then I took charge after my body started freaking out and saying, what are you doing to me? And I ended up on the urgent care table and the doctor said to me, stay out of the hospital at all cost. Then I started asking better questions. We all know that to get better answers, we have to ask better questions. So when you don't know, when you ask a question, I love this. This is one of my all-time favorite questions. And I kind of made it up. When you don't know the answer, and you ask a better question and you're still not getting the answer, start with but. But if I did know, what might the answer be? Well, I don't know. But if I did know, what might the answer be? You might have to ask yourself that question 5 times. But if I did know, what might the answer be? A friend of mine has been working with a gentleman who had some diabetic neuropathy. Now, what that means is that he had lost some sensation in his foot. The short version of the story is the guy ended up with a blister on his foot, starts as a callus, turns into a blister, becomes an ulcer, which just means a hole, has this hole in his foot, foot gets all swollen. He doesn't even know it's there because he has no feeling there. All of a sudden, his leg is all swollen, his foot is all swollen. He goes to the emergency room and he's like, "Doc, oh my God, what's going on here?" He's like, "Well, you have diabetes." "Well, yeah, duh, I know. I've been treating that for a long time." "Well, yeah, you got diabetic neuropathy, which means you can't feel anything and your leg's going to get cut off." They literally marked on his leg with the marker, you know, put the little dotted lines around his leg. And I know I've talked about this before on the Ocean Mist Power Hour, but I'm bringing it up again because this is really critical. "And we're going to need to amputate your leg." And the guy was like, "Oh no, we're not going to amputate my leg." And he went back and he started asking better questions. "Well, I don't know what to do, but if I did know, what might I do?" Well, he ended up in a workshop where the whole conversation turned to plant-based living. And you've heard these episodes before. And if you haven't, go back to our website. Go back to the kciw.org website and look for the diabetes segment and listen to it because it's phenomenal. It talks about what you can do to deal with diabetes and diabetic neuropathy, what kinds of changes you can make. I'm always going to tell you, it's in your hands. So if you don't know what to do, what if you did know? How might you approach it differently? What can you do to improve your health? Now, one of my heroes, absolute heroes in the whole wide world is Dr. Michael Greger. He runs a website called nutritionfacts.org. Now, you know he wrote the book, How Not to Die, and you know that his nutritionfacts.org website is a completely free resource of thousands, tens of thousands of pieces of content, videos, blog posts, audios, lectures, webinars, everything is free. There are a couple things that you can purchase, but every penny of your purchase goes to charity. He takes nothing for the work. He does it all as a labor of love to his grandmother who died at age 96 instead of 65. You might remember the story, short, quick, and dirty. End stage heart disease, is told go home and die, says I'm not ready to go home and die, goes off to Nathan Pritikin, goes on plant-based diet, changes everything in a matter of a few weeks and lives another 31 years, spurring her grandson, Michael Greger, to go into medicine and to become the nutritionfacts.org leader that now is changing the world. This guy is literally changing the world. So when I talk about you changing your biochemistry and learning what to do it, here's Dr. Greger to step up and help us. Now, he has put together this evidence-based weight loss live presentation, which you can watch. You can go to nutritionfacts.org, go to the evidence-based weight loss live presentation. We are not going to have time to cover every single bit of this, but I'm going to tell you the highlights. We're going to go through it. Now, Dr. Greger starts out by saying, surely if there was some safe, simple, side-effect-free solution to the obesity epidemic, we would know about it by now, right? I'm not so sure. He says it may take up to 17 years before research findings make it into day-to-day clinical practice. To take one example that was particularly poignant for my family, heart disease. You know, decades ago, Dr. Dean Ornish and colleagues published evidence in one of the most prestigious medical journals in the world that our leading cause of death could be reversed with diet and lifestyle changes alone. Yet hardly anything changed. Even now, hundreds of thousands of Americans continue to needlessly die from what we learned decades ago was a reversible disease. In fact, Dr. Greger says, I had seen it with my own eyes. My grandmother was cured of her end-stage heart disease by one of Dr. Ornish's predecessors, Nathan Pritikin, using similar methods. So, Dr. Greger says, if effectively the cure to our number one killer of men and women could get lost down some rabbit hole and ignored, what else might there be in the medical literature that could help my patients? But that just didn't have a corporate budget driving its promotion. Well, I made it my life's mission to find out, he says, and that's why I became a doctor in the first place and why I started my nonprofit site, nutritionfacts.org. So what does the science show is the best way to lose weight? You know, here we are, we're just about ready to crest over to Christmas. We've come through Halloween, we've come through Thanksgiving, we're about ready to hit Christmas and New Year's. You know that the average American gains 10 pounds during the holidays? 10 pounds during the holidays? Oh my gosh, that's just the average American. Some people are going to gain 25 or 30 pounds during the holidays, and some people will lose a little bit of weight, but 10 pounds is the average. That's crazy. Now, if you want, Dr. Greger says, testimonials and before and after pictures, you have come to the wrong place. He says, I'm not interested in anecdotes. I'm interested in the evidence. When it comes to making decisions as life and death important as the health and well-being of yourself and your family, there's really only one question. And that question is this. What does the best available balance of evidence show right now? Right now. Well, the problem is that even just sticking to the peer-reviewed medical literature is not enough, as false and scientifically misleading, unsupported beliefs about obesity are pervasive, even in scientific journals. So the only way to get at the truth, then, is to dive deep into the primary literature and read all the original studies themselves. But who's got time for that? There are more than 500,000 scientific papers on obesity, with 100 new ones published every day. Even researchers in the field might not be able to keep track beyond their narrow domain, but that's what we do at nutritionfacts.org. Dr. Greger and his team comb through tens of thousands of studies a year, so you don't have to. Very, very, very nice. And indeed, they have uncovered a treasure trove of buried data. Like today, he's going to cover simple spices, for example, proven in randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trials to accelerate weight loss for pennies a day. But with so little profit potential, it's no wonder those studies never saw the light of day. The only profiting Dr. Greger cares about, though, is your health. And that's why 100% of the proceeds he receives from all of his books, DVDs, speaking engagements are all donated to charity. He just wants to do for our families what Nathan Pritikin did for his family. Isn't that amazing? I love it. But wait, isn't weight loss just about eating less and moving more? I mean, isn't a calorie a calorie? Well, that's what the food industry wants you to believe. The notion that a calorie from one source is just as fattening as any other is a trope broadcast by the food industry as a way to absolve itself of culpability. Coca-Cola itself even put an ad out there emphasizing this one simple common sense fact. They actually have quotes around this. They quoted this. This one simple common sense fact. As the current and past chairs of Harvard's nutrition department put it, quote, this central argument from the industry is that the overconsumption of calories from carrots would be no different from the overconsumption of calories from soda. What? If a calorie is just a calorie, why does it matter what we put in our mouths? Well, let's explore that example of carrots versus Coca-Cola. It is true that in a tightly controlled laboratory setting, 240 calories of carrots, which would be 10 carrots, would have the same effect on calorie balance as the 240 calories in a bottle of Coke. But this comparison falls flat on its face out in the real world. Why? Because you could chug those liquid candy calories in less than a minute. But eating 240 calories of carrots would take you more than 2.5 hours of sustained, constant chewing. Not only would your jaw get sore, but 240 calories of carrots is like 5 cups. You might not even be able to fit them all in. Look, your stomach is only so big. Once you fill it up, stretch receptors in our stomach walls tell us when we've had enough. But different foods have different amounts of calories per stomachful. So some foods have more calories per cup, per pound, per mouthful than others. That reminds me of when Dr. McDougall was in the studio and we talked about fat. And I don't know why it whacked me upside the head so hard, because I've studied this stuff. I've been through these nutrition trainings. And he sat across the desk from me and he said, yeah, fat, you know, he just brought out the whole concept of fat isn't just empty calories. It's not just something that, you know, you use to fry your food in and this and that. He's like, no, it adds up and then it gums up your system. That I don't know why it blew me away so much, but it is coming back to this article. The concept of calorie density, the number of calories in a given amount of food. So 3 pounds is about what the average American eats in a day. As you can see, for example, oil has a high calorie density, right? Here we come back to this fat thing, meaning a high calorie concentration lots of calories packed into a small space. Drizzling just a tablespoon of oil on a dish adds over 100 calories. For those same calories, you could have instead eaten about 2 cups of blackberries, for example, a food with a low calorie density. So these two meals have the same number of calories. You could swig down that spoonful of oil and not even feel anything in your stomach. But eating a couple of cups of berries could start to fill you up. That's why, yes, biochemically, a calorie is a calorie. But eating the same amount of calories in different foods can have different effects. Wow. See, don't you find this stuff fascinating? I mean, I totally do. The other day, I cooked something I call zoodles and mushrooms. It's just zucchini noodles. They've gone through like a spiralizer, which if you don't have a spiralizer, man, invest a few bucks and get one. It is transformative in your kitchen. So I have this spiralizer. Boom, I turn these 3 zucchini into zoodles. So now they're just zucchini noodles. And in the past, I would have thrown, I don't know, 2 or 3, maybe 4 tablespoons of oil into the pan because I'm also going to cook them with mushrooms. And I always take 8 ounces of mushrooms, run them through my food processor. Bam, they're sliced up nice and skinny and little and cute and sweet. And throw in some onions, throw in a little bit of garlic, throw in my zoodles and fry that stuff up. And oh man, it's so good. But those, let's just say 3 tablespoons of oil are packing several hundred calories. And they don't do that much. The other day I made zoodles, mushrooms, onions, garlic, everything. And I used a frozen vegetable broth cube. I know this sounds so weird, but again, you get to pick it. I get to pick it. And so recently, my good friend had talked to me about creating vegetable broth. Well, I use a lot of veggies in my kitchen. And I think of myself as a pretty progressive cook. But this friend has blown me away. Like, I am learning so much from my friend Sherry. Like, Sherry, if you're listening, you are my goddess. I'm telling you what. She said, yeah, you don't want to fry things in oil. I'm like, well, what about just a little bit of oil? She's like, well, make some vegetable broth. I'm like, I always feel guilty. I don't want to throw away all the vegetables. And I love the soup. And she's like, when you use your vegetables and you chop off the ends of your vegetables and you trim up all your vegetables, your lettuces, everything you trim up, throw all that into a baggie and throw it in your freezer. And then every once in a while, when the baggie gets nice and full, throw it into a pan and make some vegetable stock. Then you're not throwing away the vegetables. You're throwing away the scraps of the vegetables, which you would have thrown into your compost anyway. I was like, what? I was blown away by that. So I did it, made some vegetable cubes, threw them in my freezer. And that's what I used to saute my zoodles in the other night. Gary told me it was the best zoodles he ever had. And it was completely fat-free. And it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. So these different calories, biochemically, if we hear this right, biochemically, a calorie is a calorie, but eating the same amount of calories in different foods can have different effects. Just think about it. If we eat 3 pounds of food a day, what if we ate 3 pounds of butter a day? Might that have a different effect on our body than 3 pounds of lettuce or 3 pounds of carrots? Yeah, big time. So Dr. Greger says the average human stomach can expand to fit about 4 cups of food. So a single stomach full of strawberry ice cream, for example, could max out our calorie intake for the entire day. But for the same 2,000 calories, to get those same 2,000 calories from strawberries themselves, you'd have to eat 44 cups of berries. That's 11 stomachfuls. Now, as delicious as berries are, Dr. Greger says, I don't know if I could fill my stomach to bursting 11 times a day. Some foods are just impossible to overeat. They are so low in calorie density, you just physically couldn't eat enough to even maintain your weight. In a lab, a calorie is a calorie, but in life, far from it. Who wants to be on a diet? I don't. I'm sick of dieting. But you know what's easy? A lifestyle change. A lifestyle change. Moving away from the things that make us sick and fat and tired, and moving into the things that give us health and vibrance and energy. God, I love this stuff. I can't even get over how much I love this stuff. So traditional weight loss diets focus on decreasing portion size. But we know these eat less approaches can leave people feeling hungry and unsatisfied. A more effective approach may be to shift the emphasis from restriction to positive eat more messaging of increasing intake of healthy, low calorie density foods. But until you know, you don't know that until you put it to the test. So check this out. Researchers in Hawaii tried putting people on more of a traditional Hawaiian diet with all the plant foods they could eat, unlimited fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and beans. and the study subjects lost an average of 17 pounds in just 21 days. What? What? Unlimited quantities of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and beans. They lost 17 pounds in 21 days. Who here would love to lose 17 pounds in 21 days? Eating all they wanted. Unlimited quantities. Look, if that's all we took from this, if the only thing, if you wanted to lose weight and the only sentence you hear in this whole entire 1 hour broadcast is this, eat unlimited quantities of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and beans, and the study subjects lost an average of 17 pounds in just 21 days. Bam, done, gone, just like that. Boom. Calorie intake dropped by 40%, but not because they were eating less food. They lost 17 pounds in 3 weeks eating more food, in excess of 4 pounds a day. How could that be? Because whole plant foods tend to be so calorically dilute, you can stuff yourself without getting the same kind of weight gain. They lost 17 pounds in 3 weeks eating more food. That's why low in calorie density is on my list of the 17 ingredients for an ideal weight loss diet. Now look, if the power to transform your life is in your own hands, don't you want to do it? Don't you want to do it? Don't you want to stop limping and start leaping? Don't you want to jump for joy? Don't you want to be able to run around with your grandkids or just stand up without going, or moving without grunting or groaning? Wouldn't it be cool to get down on the floor? How about just getting out of your bed without it being really uncomfortable? Wow, I love it. So as noted before, Dr. Greger says, Americans appear to average about 3 pounds of food a day. So if you stuck with mostly these foods, you can see how you can eat more and still shed pounds. A landmark study set to be published in December of 2019 found that even when presented with the same number of calories and the same salt, sugar, fat, fiber, and protein, processed foods led to weight gain, 2 pounds gained over 2 weeks, and unprocessed foods led to weight loss, 2 pounds down in the same 2 weeks. Here's one of their processed food meals, which is probably healthier actually than what most people eat. Non-fat Greek yogurt, baked potato chips, sugar-free diet lemonade with a turkey sandwich has the same number of calories as this, what the unprocessed meal folks were eating. Ready? Kind of a Southwest entree salad with black beans, avocados, nuts. That's the calorie density effect. Same calories, but there's just more food. Now, what's really cool is if you go to this video and you see, he shows the pictures of these two things, and you look at the other plate, the one with the Southwest entree salad with black beans, avocados, nuts, you're like, dang, that looks so good. It's the same calories, but there's just more food. No wonder it satisfied their hunger. And they ended up 4 pounds lighter in 2 weeks eating more food. So how can you decrease the calorie density of your diet? Well, just a quick peek at the two extremes should suggest two methods: abandon added fats and add abandoned vegetables. Ready? Let's hear that again. Abandon added fats and add abandoned vegetables. Now, Dr. McDougall told me that a few weeks ago, and guess what? If you've listened to this show at all, ever, which I don't know if anybody listens. I hope they do. Actually, I know they do because I've had some people tell me it's making a difference in their life. So woohoo, we're making a difference. That's awesome. All I ever wanted to do was be a light to my family, which is working. They're into it. I love it. And if I could be a light to your family too, that would be awesome. It is working. When Dr. McDougall sat across the table and told me, get rid of the fat out of your diet, you've heard me lament, oh, I just got these last few pounds. They're coming off. And it's happening almost automatically, like I'm not making any massive changes. Yes, I swapped out the few tablespoons of olive oil or avocado oil for those little frozen cubes of vegetable broth that I made at home. Yes, I'm doing that. Yes, I've gone much, much lower fat, and it's making a difference. There's so many ways it's making a difference, but it's coming off the middle. And I'm excited about that because guess what? I'm in the middle of the holidays too, just like you. I went through Halloween with very little candy. I did have some. I went through Thanksgiving with a plant-based Thanksgiving dinner. It was awesome. I was gorged. I ate a ton. It was kind of gross, but, you know, just from the gorging standpoint. But the food was freaking unbelievable. It was so good. And I'm heading into Christmas losing weight. Here we go. I love it. So Dr. Greger says, hey, by the way, thanks for being here on the, before we say what Dr. Greger says, thanks for being here on KCIW. 100.7 FM on your radio dial, anywhere in the world, any time of day, on the podcast, on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. I appreciate you being here with us. Hey, method number one, according to Dr. Greger covertly put people on a relatively low-fat diet, and they tend to lose body fat every day, even though they can eat as much as they want. If you instead give those same people the same meals, but this time sneak in enough extra fats and oils to change it to a high-fat diet, they gain body fat every day. See, that's the part about it that blows me away, is like it happens in the moment. In the moment. It happens in the moment. Like somehow in my mind, I'm like, well, if I eat fat today, then like in 2 weeks, I guess I'll gain some weight. Or, you know, if I don't eat well today, then in the future, I'll have some health problem. No, no. And that's the part about Dr. McDougall sitting across the table from me. He said, it happens right now. You eat the fat right now and it goes in your body right now and it gums up your system right now. It's immediate. It's in the moment. In the moment. That's what Dr. Greger just said. Put people on a low-fat diet, they tend to lose body fat every day, even though they can eat as much as they want. If you instead give those same people the same meals, but this time sneak in enough extra fats and oils to change it to a high-fat diet, they gain body fat every day. Well, where are the sources of these fats? I had a friend in my house recently. She stayed with us for a while, and she was here for about 3 months. And she was at my home right after I had had that interview with Dr. McDougall. And I came home and I was like talking all about fat. She's like, dude, you don't eat any fat at all. I'm like, yeah, I do. I really do. She looks at my diet for a day. And she goes, where was the fat in your diet today? I'm like, well, there was avocado oil in the thing that I prepared, whatever it was. And then if I use that upgraded cream cheese and put it on my bagel, there's an awful lot of fat in that. If I use that upgraded American cheese. I call these things upgraded because they're not animal products. As far as I'm concerned, if I'm not having to kill an animal to eat my food, that's an upgrade for sure. But it's not really a physical, energetic, nutritional upgrade if it's high fat. So if I'm eating a Beyond Burger, which I do, I just don't eat them every day. If I'm eating a Beyond Sausage, which I do, I love them. I don't eat them every day and I cook them and I squeeze out as much of the fat as I can. So once I started really looking at that, oh, a handful of cashews, fat, an avocado, fat. Yes, those are whole foods. They're going to be better for you than just slathering olive oil all over your salad. Okay, here we go. Dr. Greger says, in fact, in a famous prison experiment in Vermont, lean inmates were overfed up to 10,000 calories a day to try to experimentally make them fat. This turned out to be surprisingly difficult. Most started dreading breakfast and involuntarily threw it up. The researchers learned how difficult it was to have people gain weight on purpose, unless you feed them lots of fat. To get prisoners to gain 30 pounds on a regular diet, it took about 140,000 excess calories per certain amount of body surface area. To get the same 30-pound weight gain by just adding fat to their diets, all they had to do was feed them about an extra 40,000 calories. That sounds so crazy, right? It's over a period of time. They didn't feed them 40,000 calories in a day. When the extra calories were in the form of straight fat, it took as many as 100,000 fewer calories to gain the same amount of weight. A calorie is not a calorie. It depends on what you eat. In this case, lowering fat content effectively made up to 100,000 calories disappear. That's why low in added fat is on my list of ideal weight loss ingredients as well. Now, when you go to nutritionfacts.org, you watch this video, the evidence-based weight loss live presentation, which you can do right now. Right now, you can literally pop it up on your phone, go to your laptop, your tablet, your desktop, whatever, go to the library. You can watch this presentation and you'll see the graphs, the charts, because it's really neat. You can also download them. Now, Dr. Greger says there are, however, two important exceptions. Processed foods with, quote, reduced fat claims, unquote, are often so packed with sugar that they can have the same number of calories as a higher fat product. So Snackwell's fat-free cookies, for example, at 1,700 calories per pound, are as calorie-dense as a cheese Danish. The other exception to the low-fat rule is that vegetables are so calorically dilute that even a high-fat veggie dish, like some oily broccoli with garlic sauce, tends to be less calorie-dense overall, which brings us to the second strategy for lowering calorie density. Instead of sneaking out fat, sneak in vegetables. This is awesome, you guys. This is absolutely awesome. It's radical. It's life-changing. This can change your life. This can help you go from unhealth to vibrant health, from disease to vibrance, to health, to energy, from despair to happiness and joy. You don't have to be sick. You don't have to be fat, sick, and tired. You can be healthful, energetic, move easily. You get to pick it. Dr. Greger says the biggest influence on calorie density is not fat, but water content. Since water adds weight and bulk without adding calories, the most calorie-dense foods and the most calorie-dense diets tend to be those that are dry. So like potato chips? Oh, hello. Don't we all just love Lay's potato chips? Aren't they great? Remember what I've said about Lay's potato chips in the past? They have that saying for a long time, you can't eat just one. That's not a slogan. That's not a dare. That's a threat. That is a threat. I'm not eating those potato chips. I walk around the grocery store now and I see all the red, yellow, orange, blue labels. And all I can think of when I see that is poison, 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 poison. It's not going to support my health. They have no desire in supporting my health. Wow. So Dr. Greger says some vegetables, on the other hand, are more than 95% water, and not just iceberg lettuce. Cucumbers, celery, turnips, cooked Napa cabbage, bok choy, summer squash, zucchini, bean sprouts, and bamboo shoots, all of them top out at 95% water. They're basically just water in vegetable form. A big bowl of water-rich vegetables is practically just a big bowl of trapped water containing all kinds of awesome nutrients. The effect on calorie density is so dramatic, the food industry wants in on the action. Listen to this. They figure they could use nanotechnology to, quote, structure a solid processed food similar to a celery stalk with self-assembled water-filled nanocells or nanotubes, unquote. No need, as Mother Nature beat you to it. When dozens of common foods pitted head-to-head for their ability to satiate appetites for hours, the characteristic most predictive was not how little fat or how much protein it had, but how much water it had. That was the number one predictor of how filling a food is. That's why high in water-rich foods is on Dr. Greger's list too. Water-rich foods like vegetables topping the charts with more than 90% water by weight, followed by most fresh fruit coming in at around 80%. Starchier vegetables, whole grains, and canned beans are mostly 70s, meaning 3/4 of their weight pure water. In general, when it comes to water-rich foods, most whole plant foods float towards the top, and most animal foods fall somewhere in the middle, and most processed foods sink to the bottom. Wow! In a famous series of experiments, researchers at Penn State decided to put water-rich vegetables to the test. That's what I love about Dr. Greger. You know, he's always putting everything to the test, and he makes sure that what he's doing is the full, finest evidence-based nutrition information you can get. So I love this. They're going to put it to the test. Study subjects were served pasta and told to eat as much or as little as they like. On average, they consumed about 900 calories of pasta. What do you think would happen if, as a first course, you gave them 100 calories of salad composed largely of lettuce, carrots, cucumber, celery, and cherry tomatoes? Would they then go on to eat the same amount of pasta and end up with a 1,000-calorie lunch, so 900 calories plus the 100 calories? Or would they eat 100 fewer calories of pasta, effectively canceling out the added salad calories? This sounds weird, right? But it gets even better than that. They ate more than 200 fewer calories of pasta. Thanks to the salad, 100 calories in, 200 calories of pasta out. So, in essence, the salad had a negative 100 calories. Did you get that? Did you see how that worked? Preloading with vegetables can effectively subtract 100 calories out of a meal. That's how you can lose weight, by eating more food. Man, this is awesome. This is absolutely awesome information. It's awesome material. It's designed to help you reclaim your birthright. A healthy, energetic, vibrant body that you can use to do good in the world, to do good in your family, that you can learn more. All right, we're going to get this wrapped up here. Of course, Dr. Greger says, the type of salad matters. The researchers repeated the experiment, this time adding a fatty dressing and extra shredded cheese, which quadrupled the salad's calorie density. Now, eating this salad as a first course didn't turn the 900-calorie meal into one with less than 800 calories. Instead, it turned it into a meal with calories in the quadruple digits. In other words, it went over the 1,000-calorie mark. It's like preloading pizza with garlic bread. You could end up with more calories overall. So what's the cutoff? Studies on preloading show that eating about a cup of food before a meal decreases subsequent intake by about 100 calories. So to get a negative calorie effect, the first course would have to contain fewer than 100 calories per cup. And as you can see in a chart that you could see if you were looking at this, this would include most fresh fruits and vegetables, but having something like a dinner roll wouldn't work. But hey, give people a large apple to eat before that same pasta meal, and rather than consuming 200 calories less, it was more like 300 calories less. So how many calories does an apple have? Get this, it depends on when you eat it. Before a meal, an apple could effectively have about negative 200 calories. Is that blowing your mind? It's blowing my mind. I wish I had time to finish this whole entire thing. I don't. I might just pick up on it. I think I'm going to. I'm going to plan to read the rest of this. We're going to go through the rest of this next week because it's so groundbreaking. It's absolutely fascinating material that can help you move into a place of vibrance in your life. Why am I so concerned about that? Because you know what? We all have the same 24 hours in a day. We do. We all have the same 24 hours in a day. And I'm going to tell you something else. We all have some extraordinary wealth. You can pay any amount of attention that you want to. You do not have to be wealthy to pay attention. It is the single most valuable currency that you own, your attention. It's a huge currency, and it is widely and freely abundant and available to every person now on the planet, ever on the planet in the past, and ever coming to this planet in the future. You are wealthy in your attention. And you're learning those things now that you can pay attention in a new way. Never miss an opportunity to mess with your body's biochemistry. Do it through your nutrition. Drink more water. Eat more apples. Put more fruits and veggies in your body. Thanks for joining me here today on the Ocean Mist Power Hour. It's been such a pleasure to share this nutrition journey with you. Really appreciate Dr. Michael Greger and NutritionFacts.org for yet again giving us the materials to create a healthy, energetic, sustainable future. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.